up those fryers, because I am sure hungry for one...
Greg Hill Show.
Broadcasting from beautiful and safe Brighton, Massachusetts.
Woo! It's go, 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 go time.
It's...
You're a cool hill man.
The Greg Hill Show.
We're up and at it, Greg. Don't worry about that.
Tick, tick, boom.
Starring the biggest foodie on the planet.
To me, food is the most important thing.
White bread is succulent.
Greg Hill.
Finalists for the new state seal, flag, and motto.
Oh, yeah. We're getting rid of the old state seal.
Yep.
Like, I want something that's Massachusetts.
Right.
Like, they should have put a mug of clam chowder on there.
Yeah.
Featuring the parlay playboy himself.
This tickles my fanny. Does that math make math? I did not know that.
Wiggy.
People don't know football, and this is where they clearly get exposed.
Sometimes they just gotta know the place. They're not qualified to do what Mayo's doing.
Joined by Boston's number one linguist.
Criminal mischief and arson
have become this kind of tandem.
Pete Buttigieg.
Courtney Cox.
It's a very diverse condiment. You can make aioli with it. You can put it on a sandwich. Right. You can dip your french fries. That's my personal favorite.
And accompanied by two big brains behind the glass.
Don't put salmonella with your yams.
I'm on Shime Island.
Talk to me, Daddy.
You are both morons.
Curtis and Shime.
Courtney, my buddy Kev knows how to throw a party.
Courtney told me yesterday she expects the average height at your fantasy football draft to be 5'2".
Now.
Let's get down to business.
It's time to party.
It's time for the Greg Hill Morning Show.
Good morning.
Good hello, morning, everybody.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Good morning, my neighbors.
On Boston Sports Original.
W-E-E-I. It's my people.
W-E-E-I.
When I say Greg Hill and you say show, Greg Hill. Yeah. Greg Hill.
Yeah.
Greg Hill. Show. All right.
Woo! It's go, 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 go time.
Let the games begin.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Tick, tick, boom.
Good morning from Gillette Stadium and the first legit Patriots Monday of the Mike Vrabel era, which is happening on a Tuesday. Because summer is over and we are on to football. We're on to Patriots football. We're on to college football. And we got a lot to get to this morning from Gillette. I don't know where you want to start. We could start with Bill Belichick's debut last night as a college football coach. We can start with talking about this this week for the Patriots. Curtis, we could pivot right over to the Boston Red Sox that sit this morning after this weekend. 2.5 games out of first place.
Yeah, I am so thrilled for the Red Sox. They had a nice weekend. Jaron Duran, 3-run walk, inside the park home run.
Yeah.
But my mind.
Couple interesting home runs over the weekend. The Trevor Story dinger yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen something like that at Fenway Park before or anywhere else.
Right.
Before.
That is only at Fenway Park. Is that possible?
Yeah. Like and off the glove. You banged it off the glove, off the pesky pole.
Yep.
And, but anyway, yeah, sorry, I interrupted.
I just, yesterday was so perfect in terms of the fans around here reacting to Bill Belichick because the UNC Tar Heels started out so brilliantly. Everybody on social media was like, Bill Belichick, 33rd team.
Yeah,
33rd team was going bananas.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then, immediately following, they gave up, I think, 40 unanswered points. And everybody that had said that game made Bill Belichick into this brilliant college coach then immediately pivoted to, oh, it's 70 new players.
Yeah.
What do you expect? This is going to be a long rebuild.
That looked just like
the Patriots when he was here.
There are definitely some legit excuses, I think. But it didn't go the way I expected.
No.
Especially watching that first drive. Well, first of all, watching the hype and seeing, you know, Randy Moss there, seeing Jordan and Randy Moss talking. I didn't see the whole entire game, so... Did Jordan and Jordan ever talk last night during the game?
I didn't see them, but okay. I do think that those were like conjoining suites. Okay. I think that was like one big suite. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it did not go the way I expected because that first drive was so incredible.
I looked up to bet them for Natty Champs after the first one. Sure. I would have bet 100, you would have won 35K.
All right, you was in a futures bet right there.
I was.
Yeah. What a halftime adjustment for Bill. I mean, unbelievable. First play. 75 yards, but that's what the Patriots were when he was here the final years. You had a great scripted offensive first drive, and you started out well, and then a guy whose calling card was adjusting and beating the team after seeing what they did is the one who gets beaten in all the adjustments. The tackling on defense was awful. The way in which they were unable to control an elusive quarterback, does that look familiar with the Patriots?
Mm-hmm.
It was just shocking to me. I thought the same thing. I was like, wow, Patricia on Saturday at noon was the Belichick disciple stifling a Manning. It was the return of the Manning face. Patricia did a phenomenal job. I was dead wrong. And I thought entering last night, if I were to bet, I was going to bet on the UNC Tar Heels because I said, oh, there is a huge advantage in the ability to diagram a defense as a professional for these college guys, and it just didn't materialize.
Just not have the personnel. That's the difference in college and the pros.
Well, and he was up against that TCU quarterback is a really good quarterback, and I just think that it's going to take a while for Bill Belichick. I mean, but Curtis, you definitely are correct this morning in that it did not go the way many thought it would go last night.
So, yeah, the only problem is you don't have a while. Like if Bill Belichick was.
Well, he has forever. I mean,
if he was 60 years old, we'd say he has a while, but he's 72, 73?
Yeah, I mean, if you're in the Curtis camp, he's not going anywhere, so he's got 5 years. He's got however. I mean, is he somebody that you see retiring? I think he probably dies on the football field.
No,
I think he'll retire. I don't think he'll die on the field.
Really?
Yeah, I think that the way in which yesterday played out, you know, how long is that headache going to go before he says I've had enough?
Wait a minute. You think because that game didn't go well, he's now looking at an early retirement?
No, I'm not saying just because of that. If we keep seeing stuff like that over and over, I mean, it wasn't exactly a cakewalk his last couple seasons here. The stress level for a 73-year-old, yeah, I'm sure it's going to get to him at some point. If that keeps going on the way in which it did, all eyes are on him. Like, nobody's waking up this morning talking about Gio Lopez going out with a back injury. They're talking about Bill Belichick. That's a lot.
And if you're,
but that's what he's faced his whole entire career.
But he's been winning most of it.
Yeah, that's the difference.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I feel like he's going to coach for a long, long time there. And I feel like.
What's a long, long time, though, at 73?
Another 5 years, at least.
Yeah, but what if he only wins 4 games this year and 4 games next year? You think he's going to say, you know what, I'm going to do this for another 3-4 more years?
Yeah.
And if you're UNC, I think maybe UNC goes, all right, well. It worked in the NFL, but college football is different. College football, you don't have the talent. So, you know, when you scheme up things, if you don't have the talent, the difference between Matt Patricia and Bill Belichick is Matt Patricia is at Ohio State. They got talent up and down the board where UNC is trying to get talent in the world of college football. Now, you're going to have to – your roster's going to turn over every year because of the transfer portals, guys wanting more money, and then – how long do some of those players go after this year and go, do I want to deal with Bill Belichick, the coach, when we only win 4 or 5 games?
I found a really interesting pregame going into it. The amount of talk there was about players saying, you know, Bill's not on the field. It's us. And in the defense wants to say, you know, we're the ones out there doing this. It's not just all Bill. Like the fact that going into week one, obviously Bill Belichick becoming your head coach is going to draw a lot of media attention. But the fact that they made it seem like players were already kind of sick of that, it shocked me. Going into week one, your first game with the best head coach of all time, and you already have players talking about the fact that it's them out on the field, not Bill. That was surprising.
You got to understand, they might know that Bill Belichick is the greatest coach because of what their dad or their uncle or their grandfather tells them, right? But they don't know Bill Belichick in that way. You know what I mean? They're like, well, you know. What does that mean? That was how long ago? And that was with Tom Brady. So it's a different world that he's coaching. It'd be the same way in the NFL. Like
these guys would know him, but they would say that's a long time ago. What have you been able to do here recently? You know, and Bill has to understand it's going to be completely different with these young kids who don't understand the game, who might football IQs might not be as high. And then if your quarterback, they literally talked about he went 2 hours without completing a pass. 2 hours.
It took until the third quarter for them to successfully convert on a third down. I mean, the other thing, just the big picture, Bill Belichick, his entire career here was predicated upon ignoring the noise and not creating it. And now he's at North Carolina, and they're the 33rd NFL team before there's even a snap. Like, I watched that game. Do you think Steve Belichick,
He didn't create that noise. That's created around him.
No, that's what they – him and Lombardi, that's the
whole
thing.
That's what they said.
I don't think he doesn't care about the noise. Like,
Well, what do you mean? He's saying that they're an NFL team in college. If you want to get to the pros, you come to North Carolina.
But he's talking about his approach – in order to try to get recruits. Like,
Think it's somewhere today at Ohio State, Ryan Day's like, oh, they're the 33rd NFL team. We're not the reigning national champions who just beat Texas in week one.
No, but I don't think that Bill Belichick is out there trying to create noise around himself.
What? Everything he's been doing has been creating noise. It's been opposite of how he carried himself here.
Well, there is a Hulu documentary.
Yeah, he never wanted Hard Knocks here. I mean, that's just the step one. He never wanted that. And now they tried for Hard Knocks. They failed.
So you think he's trying to create all this noise around himself.
Because he thinks you need to do that in college.
We're just having a discussion. It's okay.
I agree with that.
So you think that his intention down there is to create noise around himself?
Right. If it's not, he's doing a horrible job.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of the hype is driven by people elsewhere because it's a completely unique experience. It's a legendary coach in the arguably the most successful coach ever in the NFL who goes to college. Normally, it's the other way around. So.
Right.
I think that's the hype that's around.
But he also wants that. It's not really about the hype. It's more about getting the eyes on UNC, right? In college football, that's what you need to do for your school. Is try to bring eyes there, try to get recruits there. You want people to talk about you nationally. So if it is a Hulu documentary, if it is about, you know, saying, hey, we're the 33rd NFL team, Bill, we're in the NFL. Bill didn't need to do that, but in college
he hated it. He hated Tom versus time. That was an issue that they had cameras around.
But you don't need to do that in the NFL because if you're winning, you're successful. But in college, it's not about that because kids are going, well, why do I need it? What's the reason I should come to UNC? Where in the pros, they're just looking to get drafted and get paid.
Which also plays into the fact that when it was first announced that he was going to be the head coach at UNC, everyone was saying, shocked that he was going to college first and foremost, but then also that it was an ACC school, that he wasn't going to a massive SEC program. So that, I think, is another reason why he wants eyeballs on UNC.
Right.
It was UNC-TCU last night, like an ACC matchup. That would not have had the eyeballs, the hype going into it if Bill Belichick wasn't the head coach.
Courtney, that is a great point. Because at the start of that game, I was thinking to myself, what do you think the numbers are going to be for this game here? We're all
massive.
Right. And I was like, and that is the Bill Belichick welcoming that kind of publicity and, you know, all this stuff, because he knows that's how you have to operate in college.
I'm a 33-year-old married woman who loved where they went to college. I watched the pomp and circumstance going into that last night and said, I want to go to UNC.
Me too.
I was like, I had chills watching it. Everything about it, the band, the cheerleaders, the dancers, everything, watching them run out with Bill. I mean, I can only imagine what an 18, 17, 16-year-old kid who's a high school great football player thought watching that game before the end score.
Yeah. Well, we got a lot to talk about, and we will talk about it with a bunch of guests this morning because we are officially underway when it comes to week one of the NFL season, week one of the New England Patriots season. And that means that Mike Vrabel will join us here in about 15 minutes or so on a Mic'd Up Monday, and a lot to talk to the head coach about. I feel like he got a little touchy when Jabril Peppers came up yesterday. So I don't know how much more he will say on that, but we will
that is strange.
We will certainly ask him. Strange the reaction or strange releasing him?
Strange releasing him.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. I And he went to social media yesterday, Peppers, and basically was indicating that his impression of it is a scheme thing. And, you know, he said, I've played for, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but I've played for six head coaches and X amount of defensive coordinators, and scheme was never an issue for me. So I don't, but then Mike Vrabel said yesterday, it's not scheme. So I don't know if it relates to what happened last year, and if they don't want a guy like that around here.
You could have did that at the beginning training camp.
It just seems dumb. Like, if you look at the 53-man roster, he's certainly, without him, he's certainly talented enough to be one of the best 53 on this football
team. I know he's a safety and not a corner, but given the question marks surrounding Christian Gonzalez with his hamstring for week one,
yeah,
why would you want to take away a guy that's a leader in that secondary? It didn't make sense to me.
And you owe him the money for this year.
Right.
Like, you got to pay him. So, I don't – it's weird, Wiggy.
Yeah,
it's really,
I the Kyle Duggar thing, I'm looking at and going, all right, maybe you don't like what he does and you're trying to move on from him.
He seemed disgruntled a bit, like Duggar in those postgame. Yeah. I could see maybe he was unhappy and that was rubbing other guys the wrong way.
But I had no – like, and I'm not there down there all the time, but I had no, like, inkling that I thought Jabril Peppers was going to be one of your starting safeties. And then now all of a sudden he's gone. Duggar's in the doghouse or wherever he's been exiled to. So it's now you got a whole new safety group and you're going in a new direction. And I didn't see the Peppers one coming. I was like, whoa.
I mean, because
the guy could still play.
Yeah, I mean, I understand a head coach who wants to, when it comes to players that have played for him previously, is going to favor those guys in some cases. I understand that, but I don't understand it if you don't have much depth when it comes to roster and you're going to pay a guy anyway. Like,
what happened off the field was adjudicated, it's over. On the field, he was a guy that I thought was a pretty good player who appeared to be somewhat of a leader. He was a guy that played in, he'd come up at the line of scrimmage. He was, had multifaceted defensive assets that helped his team.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have now over half the roster. The 70 players we talked about at North Carolina, over half of the Patriots' 53-man roster is turned over in one offseason by Vrabel. So maybe it's
may not be a bad thing.
Right.
Like that may, we will see on that. And, mm-hmm. and maybe there truly was a bigger culture issue here than anybody knew about.
Just from my experience with coaches and in the league, you want the biggest voices in the room to be your guys. Right.
Yeah.
And so,
Harold Landry, captain, maybe that's someone that he wanted to have a bigger voice that maybe, I don't know. I'm just speculating.
Robert was Splain,
captain.
Milton Williams. Yeah. Like, you want these guys, a large portion of them to be your guys.
Yeah.
And then maybe some of those other bigger voices that were already there, you kind of be like, well. Yeah.
And maybe he'll say that. Maybe we'll be able to get further from Mike Vrabel on that when he joins us in about 10 minutes or so. On a Patriots Monday, which is happening on a Tuesday, after Mike Vrabel, we will get to our leads at 7. They said it at 7:20, and certainly we will discuss what Bill Belichick said after getting doors blown by TCU last night in his debut as a head coach in college football. Boomer Esiason on this show at 8. So Boomer is back every single Patriots Monday. He will join us at 8. And look ahead to this week and the New England Patriots and the rest of the NFL. News with Courtney coming up at about 8:20 this morning. And that includes How Creepy Is It?, which very well could have been Scheim based on where it happened and what was going on in the venue while it was happening, Scheim. And then joining us here at Gillette today, because not only is it a Patriots Monday on a Tuesday, but it's a Ty Tuesday. Ty Law will be here with us at 9 this morning. So we got a lot to get to. Also, your Hill Notes, leave those now on the Odyssey app on any topic. We'll play the best ones back coming up at about 9:20 or 9:30 this morning from Gillette Stadium. Here now is Courtney with what is trending to get us started.
Your home of the Sox. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now brought to you by Awaken 180 Weight Loss. The Red Sox take the first against the Guardians after dropping the series with the Pirates. 6-4 was the final yesterday with Brian Baio going 5 innings, giving up 3 runs on 6 hits while striking out 4. That score brought to you by the Mass State Lottery. Let's make it the best night ever. Grab your friends, pick your numbers, and celebrate the night with Keno and the Mass State Lottery. You must be 18 years or older to play.
And we talked about it earlier, but great challenge yesterday on the Trevor Story home run. Mm-hmm. And Friday night, unbelievable debut by Peyton Tolley.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this team is...
The stash is back.
You already choked it away, though. You had a great opportunity against Pittsburgh, who stinks, and you choked that series, especially with Milwaukee losing. You would have had a really good chance to win, to gain ground on Toronto and only be maybe a half game behind. Kind of choked this weekend away.
Yeah, I'm not. It's not that. It doesn't bother me yet.
It don't bother you.
No,
all right.
That doesn't bother me.
And credit to where credit's due. Greg said extend Chapman.
Yes. Yeah.
I said that wouldn't happen. I the deal is phenomenal for the organization. I did not think Aroldis Chapman would sign that kind of a contract, especially he is what? Bordering on the greatest season for a Red Sox reliever ever?
Yeah, he's, when you talk about ERA specifically, he is poised. If he goes a couple further innings, doesn't give up a hit, he will have the lowest ERA ever in Red Sox history, which I think D'Lo has it now.
Papelbon.
You sure?
Well, there might be two different things. I saw the reliever record for lowest ERA is held by Papelbon from 2006. He was 0.92. And then if I think he has 5 scoreless innings in the final month, Aroldis Chapman will be beneath that. Papelbon tweeted about.
He loves it here, is what he said. So maybe that's why they were able to get him for shorter money.
But maybe season ERA, I don't know, Greg.
But the Sox have another with the Guardians tonight. First pitch at 6:35. We've got Garrett Crochet on the mound. Shaw McDonough joins Will Fleming on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's Go Shopping, Get Rewarded. Kick things off with Christian Arcan at 5:35 for the Mass Mutual pregame show. College football continued their opening weekend last night. We already talked about it, but Bill Belichick and UNC hosting TCU for an ACC showdown. The Horned Frogs absolutely destroyed the Tar Heels after a hot start for Bill's guys. 48-14 was the final in Chapel Hill.
And by the way, why wouldn't he have challenged that catch where the tight end got concussed?
That
was a clear one. I mean, I don't know whether they said he had a football move, but the ball was coming out as he was going to the ground.
Anyway. I think at that point he had kind of thrown him away.
Right. They had to get dinner after.
Well, back to work, school, it's all happening. Real life routine shouldn't be a bad word. How about winning rhythm? Losing weight every week in Awaken 180 and looking forward to each day and every weigh-in. Fast results, awaken180weightloss.com. That's what's trending. Coming up next, Mike Vrabel joins us.
It is a Patriots Monday on a Tuesday or a Mic'd Up Monday, whatever you prefer. And New England Patriots head coach Mike Vrabel is brought to you this morning by Northeast Men's Health, the experts in treating men's sexual health with 6 New England offices or at northeastmenshealth.com, by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains won't flow, and by Northeastern Savings Bank, the leading financial option for New England businesses and the families that power them. Northeastern Savings Bank, upgrade to local member DIF FDIC. Good morning, Coach.
Good morning.
How are you?
Did they like our advertisement last week with the men's health and the clean drain, or how did that
I think
did
they
that
did.
Work
yeah, they did. They liked that. They reached out.
We were talking about Wiggy's drain or something.
Yeah. They actually reached out. They wanted to know if you need any help.
No, I don't.
No. Everything's okay. Listen, I'll tell you who doesn't need any help, and that is your Buckeyes. Nice win over the weekend.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was a slow game. I felt the fourth quarter brought some action, but you know, we'll see how it goes. I watched a little bit of it and go from there.
You played against an overrated Manning at one point in your career, so you can relate.
Well done.
I was here.
Social media is a brutal place.
Oh,
and
terrible.
it never misses.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, some of the stuff is just
Do you look at any of that?
It's hard not to. You know, I mean, it's hard not to see some of the references and just, people send them and then it's just like just one thing after another. And it's just like you didn't think it could get any better and then it does. And it's just
first 30 seconds of his day.
Fun. Yeah.
First 30 seconds of your day is looking at social media. That's what you said.
Get the news.
Yeah. It was the new Manning face. It was this all the rage, you know. You created the old one, now there's another one.
It was
there were some good ones.
Yeah. I was here Wednesday night for the kickoff, and you talked about this team's identity. In fact, you said that that we should all ask any of the players that were there on Wednesday night, and they ought to be able to tell us what the identity is. What is, in your mind, the identity of this football
team? Well, again, we can talk about it again, and I've heard and learned that I see better than I hear, and so our identity is going to have to be what we put on tape, but ideally, you know, what we would like is our play style, our play demeanor, how hard we play. I mean, I think it certainly starts there. We have to, you know, be smart with the football. We have to have guys that take the football away. You know, I think that looking for opportunities to do that, finding ways to tip passes that get intercepted, finding ways to hit guys hard enough to knock the ball loose. We need guys that are willing to protect the guy with the ball. And I think that you're going to see that, and hopefully that we get the right guys that care about, you know, if we throw it to Wiggy, you know, we all need to go and protect him. There's one football. There's five guys that are eligible. The quarterback decides who to throw to. Everybody else has to just go and finish. We would love to play with great fundamentals, understand the details of the play, and make great decisions, you know, that don't cost the team. And I get penalties happen. Penalties are going to occur. But I think the things that when it's a decision-making, is it full body weight on the quarterback? Is it a blindside hit, or do I high screen on a punt return? Defenseless receiver, being the second guy in, all these things where I feel like that's a decision. That's a conscious decision. Hopefully we're making great decisions, and that we can take advantage of bad football.
When you look at the actual scheme, Mike, you know, you come from obviously Tennessee, where you ran the ball first and then you try to play good defense. Are you going to be a week-to-week game plan type of team, or are you going to say, we want to try to run the ball first and play great defense, or is that just going to change based on who your opponent is?
Well, I mean, I think it changes based on who your opponent is. I think our best player in Tennessee for most of those years was our running back. And so I think you do what your teams are equipped for and have the ability to adjust. And, you know, I thought when we had to throw the ball and we threw it on our terms and you let plays marry and partner with each other and build, that there's complementary plays. You know, I would think that hopefully the majority of our first and second down offense, if you're talking offensively, you know, you have to be able to run the football. You have to be able to marry those passes up. You have to be able to throw some screens to guys. It's hard to live in a drop-back passing game in this league. I just think that to do that is play in and play out is hard. And so you don't want to end up living in that game. There's times where the game dictates that you'll have to. But, you know, we always want to be balanced and do what the defense, you know, will allow us to do on our terms.
When it comes to Drake, he's made a point to say that throughout the preseason, he's felt like he's been a bit jittery right off the jump, and he needs to control that so that he makes less mistakes. What have you, as his head coach, seen him do to prepare for week one to be better at that?
Well, I think it's about just his preparation to not the preparation of the game or the game plan. It's just, you know, making sure that he's in a place that he's comfortable when the game starts. And again, I want them all to be excited. We are going to need energy and passion and enthusiasm, but that can't override our job. And so making sure that we get into drives and we try to structure practice the same way we would with the games and try to focus on that and how we start the game and the break and trying to finish strong and win the second half.
I know you talked a little bit about Jabril Peppers yesterday, said it wasn't a scheme thing. Looking at it from the uneducated outside, which is where I sit, I know there's, you know, in some areas not necessarily a lot of depth on this team. How difficult is it to make a decision like that to release a guy who looks like somebody, you know, who should be on this 53-man roster?
Yeah, those are always tough. I mean, those are always tough. They're difficult. We're trying to do what's best for the team. And again, we try to make decisions that we feel like are going to help us in the long term, in the short term. And those are difficult. I had a personal relationship with Jabril. I loved getting to know him and coach him, and we're just trying to get it right and obviously understand where we are from the youth and the veterans that we have in the position room and how it was and how it sat.
Mike, the roster turnover, I think it's about 50% from last year, and it feels like it has been a point of emphasis to get new leaders. I think all the captains are new. Two of the six captains, I believe, are people that were brought in this offseason. How much of your approach to this year was predicated upon making sure that the leaders that were 4-13 the last 2 years were not the leaders this year?
And somebody asked me that yesterday, and I don't think anybody else has been intentional on that or with that. And I can see, you know, that's kind of how things go when there's change and there's turnover, and some of those players were free agents. Some of those players we moved on from, you know, in the offseason. Some of them have been currently, but that was never anyone's intent. We're just trying to, you know, build the position groups and build the team and try to figure out what we need. And, you know, leadership, I think, will always continue to grow and evolve, and I hope that we have many more leaders than just the six that were named captain.
And on that, Steph Diggs was one that a lot of people were surprised was not named a captain, given that we had heard he'd been leading the receiving group. Were you surprised that the players didn't vote for Steph Diggs?
With this league, I don't think I've tried to use the word surprised. I think, you know, Steph got votes. And again, we just try to look at where the voting came out and recognize how the players voted.
Mike, one of the things as a Pats fan, I woke up, can't remember when it was, and I said, damn, Mike Apostle's in Green Bay. Were you guys in on him?
You know, we continue to have conversations about all players that are available. You know. Mike, I think you love saying Mike Apostle's.
Yeah, so, I mean, I would have loved to have seen that. The first jersey I would have got out.
No Vrabel jersey. Do you have jerseys?
I do have a Vrabel jersey.
When he says, again, he's a
dynamic player, great player. That wasn't something that, you know, we really invested a lot of time or resources in. I think when you just try to look at what we feel like is best for us right now, that wasn't entertaining that specific, you know, transaction.
Interesting.
Well, I mean, it's
generational. But my guy Sean would say generational player that you get at a bargain, price.
Yeah, I don't. You know, maybe bargain price. It just, you know, I think we just have to be very smart on building this thing, and I hope that everybody else sees it the same way. Outside of here, and we want to bring in players that feel like give us the best chance, but also, you know, we have to build some depth here to this roster, and you do that from the draft, and just it hasn't been, and we'll call it what it is, it hasn't been real great. The depth of the roster has not been through our draft the last handful of years, and that has to change. We all know that, so we'll focus on that when we get there in April. Right now it's, you know, putting guys in roles that have some versatility and building the game day roster and all these different things. But you know, I think the best teams in the league draft well. They develop their players, they re-sign them, you know, and then they carefully choose the players that they want to add in free agency.
Could you say that the drafts that being bad the last several years precluded you from trading first-round picks because you need those?
No, I was just saying that when we build this thing, And moving forward, we want to build it and make sure that we're building through the draft. And then again, like I said, retaining the players that we feel like have developed and have earned contracts. And you know, while Micah Parsons is a great player, you know, just, you know, probably wasn't the best fit or the right time, I think, for us.
You added Tommy Cutlets to the roster. Did you have to negotiate with Sean Stellato? Or
I did it.
Okay. No.
And, and when you claim somebody, you don't have to negotiate with them.
All right, so you just have to take talk
them.
To him
you just grab their hair and drag them.
So you don't have to really interact with them.
Big St. Anthony.
Yeah, he was
St. Anthony's feast.
Yeah, he was at the feast.
He was everywhere.
Why not?
The Sean Stellato. I guess it's like Christmas Day for Sean. How you doing?
He's going to go do a lot of talks at St. John's Prep.
How you doing?
Yeah. Back to Steph Diggs. Last week we talked to you about him. You said you expect him to contribute to this team a lot. Now that it's game week, he's still on track to be able to go week one and be good?
Yep. I would imagine that as of today, he'll be out there.
Great. What's the update on Gonzalez? And I know he didn't practice yesterday.
He didn't practice yesterday. That's the only update I can give you. I can't haven't seen anything from I haven't met with the trainers. I got to see you guys before, and then I'll see
but that's injury,
the trainers.
That's injury-related. You know, people look at a young player sometimes and wonder, hey, is there some kind of quiet hold?
Oh, no. I mean, I said he's working hard to come back, and when he's ready to get back out and practice, hopefully that's this week, and then we can decide and go from there.
Mike, you look at Will Campbell, first game of the season. I think you, better than anybody, can give him the advice he needs, especially to see a guy like Max Crosby and maybe some of the techniques and some of the, you know, I don't know, veteran kind of tips that you might be able to give him to help with a guy like that. What are you saying to Will about this matchup?
Well, it's going to be with all of them, and then Max can line up wherever he wants, and or they can put him wherever they want. I think it has to be for everybody blocking him. He has a certain play style, you know. And I think if you drop your head, he's going to jump around, and if you're over aggressive, he's going to, you know, try to make you miss. I think just a certain play style of just having making sure we're not overextended to where. And again, he has a very unique play style where he'll jab and jump around, and he uses his length and athleticism as opposed to, let's say, maybe more of a power player. Not that he can't do that, but again, he makes his money with instinctiveness and jumping under. If you overreach him, he's coming under and he's getting into the backfield.
Do you tell him be patient?
Well,
it's
making sure that you can't sit there and wait. You have to, if in a run game, you have to go and get on him, but you have to make sure that you're not out of control and that your head's up and your eyes are up and that you're able to redirect and again, not be overly aggressive when you're trying to block players like that. And again, it'll change based on who the player is and who you're going against, but that would be, you know, Max's skill set.
Did you watch the UNC TCU game last night?
Probably, maybe a few snaps. That's all the.
You saw the best part.
First half.
Yeah.
maybe just ended the first half.
First drive.
Thing of beauty.
Yeah. It was a thing of beauty.
If they would have ended a game after the first drive, it would have been good.
You seem to be excited about that.
No. I'm rooting for the guy, and I think, you know, I mean, you coached in college. It takes a while, don't you think, to get a program going? Come in there like that?
I don't know. Urban Meyer won 12 of the first 12 games at Ohio State, so it didn't take him long. That's my experience in college football.
All right. Okay. No. But we have the comp.
But isn't it like
I think I can only imagine the landscape of college football now and the. You know, hey, who are you? Oh, I just came from wherever. And
right.
I'm sure it's probably not as easy outside of the, you know, the top few programs.
Right. Ohio State guys have to take a pay cut when they get to the NFL.
Yeah, maybe. Hopefully.
But isn't that
it's called put it under the budget line for winning.
Yeah.
Right there.
But isn't that the difficult thing that obviously Bill's going to have to navigate through? I know when you
I don't know what he's going to have to navigate. You know what I mean? I've got plenty to navigate here.
Was your son happy with the Eagles win on Saturday?
Yeah, he was. He was excited for his first game. And, yeah, he got to wear a headset, so he's official.
That's awesome.
All right. Well, you're the Mike Vrabel era gets underway Sunday, and so
yeah, it does. It's here,
and we wish you the best of luck. I know Wednesday night you sort of refused to answer the question about your favorite restaurant in Boston.
Well, that doesn't. You know, I mean, there's going to be a lot of places I go to, so why would I? You know, I mean, it's like
I mean,
who's your favorite co-host?
Oof. Well, I mean,
Swiggy.
I mean, I I like them all. I kind of like them all equally.
Of all the choices that he had, of the three choices he had, it was I would not pick Wiggy. I'd put it out there right now.
I heard.
That was your favorite teammate, though. Come
on. Yeah, he was fun.
I heard from some people down in the seaport. They were like, wait a second, guy can't throw us a little plug out there?
Yeah, I guess. A bunch of everybody's pillow talking. Yeah, that's the problem with this place. Everybody pillow
rats.
Talks.
We got rats.
Whoever gets
restaurant rats.
It's all about
put
the
a name on it or I ain't paying attention.
Your guys love the North
I live
End.
My life. You live yours outside of here. How about that?
It's all about the freebie. I just got.
No, I don't mind paying.
No.
That's fine. Wiki does.
Yeah. We
already asked you for a jersey.
Yeah, we've already been. We're always been two different pay scales, even when we played. But I have to ask this question.
You got a parking pass for Sunday, you wouldn't even pay for it.
I can't get one here, believe me.
You can't get a pat. We'll get you a parking.
Okay. Yeah. You know what's interesting, though? In
North Street entrance. We'll get you that back.
I was trying to come back. Way. Brock Bowers. I want to, you know, talk about. He's mm-hmm. Georgia Bulldog like myself. But
oh, here we go.
No. But the
that's where the comparison stops. Very, very good player. Very athletic.
But the matchup nightmare that he presents.
Yep. He treat him as a wide receiver. He will play in line. He will block at great length. I think the biggest thing that he continues to gain speed as he's down the field and trying to locate and find the ball. He doesn't lose speed. I think that's you have to treat him as a receiver. They do a lot with him. You know, the full route tree, they'll take shots to him. So that'll be an important matchup. And also, you know, just being able to know where he is and be able to find him and understand, you know, what he's trying to do from the different locations that they put him in.
All right. Well, we'll let you go get ready for week one. Thanks.
Appreciate it, guys.
All right. Mike Vrabel is brought to you by Cross Insurance. Cross Insurance, the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots. It is a Patriots Monday on a Tuesday. We are at Gillette Stadium. We'll be right back. Well, Sean, that is ZZ Top and Got Me Under Pressure and leads this morning from Gillette Stadium on a Patriots Monday, which is happening on a Tuesday, brought to you by Subaru of New England. And with so much to love, don't miss the Subaru of New England A Lot to Love event. Find your authorized Subaru retailer at SubaruofNewEngland.com. Shime, hello.
Hey, Greg, good morning. So The Athletic released their yearly NFL season preview where they go through and they interview or they poll NFL coaches and executives from around the league. And this year they polled 31 different NFL coaches and executives. And within that, they asked for them to name the three teams that they believe will exceed expectations, to which the Patriots were tied for the first overall amount of votes, with 7 tied with the Cardinals and Raiders. But what I found even more interesting than that was that when they were asked, when those executives and coaches were asked who they believe the best offensive play callers in the NFL are, they put Josh McDaniels 6th, a guy who wasn't in football last year, a guy who has struggled outside of New England away from Bill Belichick. It is kind of wild to me how highly the rest of the NFL sees Josh McDaniels. And so it's just, I am.
Well, when you say that, though, why? I mean, he was very successful here as an offensive coordinator.
Yeah, he was very successful with Tom Brady. He had one really good season with Mac Jones. Outside of that, Greg, he has had one top 15 offense in every other team he's coached. That's including his offensive coordinator stints, like with the St. Louis Rams, or his head coaching stints with the Broncos and with the Raiders. And so, and I think they were 12th in scoring his first year with the Raiders. So,
but to be fair, that year with Mac, in hindsight, looks spectacular, given how poorly he's played elsewhere. And outside of like the Shanahans of the world and McVays, how many offensive play callers are great without a great quarterback?
Not many. Not many. You know, look at Chimes Boy and how they go from being high, Bobby Slowick, and now, you know, he's nowhere to be found.
Exactly.
He's from Witness Protection Program. And I get that he gets it. And so it's kind of like a double-edged sword for him, for Josh McDaniels, because even though it's Brady, he still gets that credit of being the offensive coordinator. So other people will go, well, you know, they had Brady, but Josh was still good at helping, you know, put things together. So he gets that credit. When we all hear, we go, well, he had Brady.
Curtis, what did you think of Freddie Kitchens last night in the game he called?
Not great. The play calling was so bad across the board in that like first half from the UNC. Like, it just was shocking to me to see a guy. I forgot that Kitchens was even in North Carolina. It seems like an odd match.
It's a head scratcher.
Very
because
odd.
Bill comes in and completely revamps the roster and the coaching staff, but keeps Freddie Kitchens. So it's kind of like, you know, you would think that Bill might have brought in one of his offensive guys to it. So it's kind of a head scratcher. Ohio State snatched him up.
Right. Yeah. All right, Chime. So good news for Patriots fans, certainly. And you are questioning whether Josh McDaniels ought to be ranked that high and why he is.
Correct. Like he only got 2 or 3 less votes than Andy Reid, who has been one of the best offensive coaches in the league for like 20 years.
All right, Shine, thank you very much.
You're
Curtis,
welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, everybody. So Wiggy is right often, as much as it pains me to say that. And he's been talking a lot about Elliot Wolf and the Fall Guy. Andrew Callahan on his podcast had this to say about the Patriots front office entering year one for Vrabel.
There was an executive in the league who raised this idea to me about, you know, again, cleaning out all the Belichick and Mayo guys. He said, no, I think this is about the Wolf guys. And Wolf himself might be next, which is, of course, speculation. This person does not know, doesn't seem to have talked to Mike Vrabel about this. But there are plenty of grounds and reasons to get rid of Elliot Wolf at this point, especially as Mike Vrabel goes into year two, not the least of which is Ryan Cowden is waiting right behind him, as we know, is his number two. The Patriots have 2 draft picks left from last year's draft class. As I understand it, Cade Wallace, as I'll tell you in this episode with Brian Barrett, probably the 53rd player in the roster right now. So you might be down to 1 in a matter of weeks, and that's the quarterback who fell to them at number 3.
So Wiggy has been saying that the reason Elliot Wolf is here is because he's going to be the fall guy if things unravel with Vrabel in the front office. And now I believe stronger than ever, the first time the Patriots lose 3 depth that can replace the player that got injured because of the poor drafts, they will fire Elliot Wolf in season.
In season.
Yep. It'll be the first guy to go. He will be the first guy, you know, off the Titanic, because the fan base can rightfully blame him for the horrific drafts that he was a part of. And this allows the guys that are already Vrabel's people that are waiting in the wings, as Callahan just said, to assume the role midseason and then have their own draft be ready to go for next spring.
Now, I will say Mike Vrabel on this show moments ago went out of his way to say that if you're looking at it from the outside and, you know, you think that we're just getting rid of guys who were a part of last season, I understand that might be how you feel, but that's not what we're doing at all. Went out of his way to say that, but
yeah, my dad's a big actions over words guy.
Yeah, right.
And their actions tell you everything you need to
know. And more fuel to your fire. And it kind of, you know, made Courtney, she was spot on. But what Vrabel said, if you look at some of the drafts here in the past handful of years, not very good. And we want to build through the draft. So that's basically saying, all right, Elliot Wolf didn't look like he did a great job. It's now, as you said, after those 3 games, it's even more of a reasoning for him to say, all right, we need to move on from that guy.
It wouldn't be a crazy spin to say if Elliot Wolf did his job, Micah Parsons would be on this team.
Micah Parsons, not a good fit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that if you have
Micah Parsons is a good fit on every NFL team.
I'm just telling you what Mike Vrabel just said. Yeah. That's all.
I know.
Yeah.
That's my retort.
Because that's what I said last week.
Yeah,
yeah, but didn't he? He was really talking more about draft picks.
He really wasn't.
Oh, I thought he was.
No, I mean, listening to him once again, like he echoed exactly what he said last week. He didn't say Micah Parsons by name last week, but I picked up on it. And when Wiggy asks about Micah Parsons, he says, "Yes, we want to build within the draft. We want to build within." This wasn't a good fit.
Right, because I don't think he wanted to part with the draft picks is what he's saying.
Yeah, but then after he says Micah Parsons, he's talking about specifically Micah Parsons being a good fit.
Well, and that's because, and then he goes, you'd have to get, obviously, you know, paraphrasing, you'd have to give up those draft picks. And he then went on in that same kind of Micah Parsons question to talk about how it's about building through the draft, how the past handful of years they haven't been very good. That's how you build your team, you know, those type of things. So it's like, and then Curtis asked about, which I thought was a good question, well, if it was talent there, would you be more willing to kind of give up those draft picks? And he didn't really want to go down that road. He kind of kept leaning towards.
Which is completely different than what Elliott Wolf said.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Curtis.
Thank
you. We are at Gillette Stadium, and it is a Patriots Monday on a Tuesday. Boomer Esiason coming up at 8. Ty Law will be with us at 9, and we will be back with the rest of today's leads next.